Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is
Fight Disciples.
Welcome to podcast episode number 594. We are the Fight Disciples. This is dedicated to the world of mixed martial arts, mainly UFC. There's bits and other bits and bats that knock about as well on this show, but it's mainly UFC stuff. So if that's your bag, make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes, and you can also subscribe to us via our website, fightdisciples.com. We're on YouTube as well, so if you want to watch this, more than welcome to do so. It's available for you there. Fight Disciples, get yourself stuck on in. Busy weekend for you, mate. Bit of an emotional roller coaster. We touched upon it on the boxing show, but it's always nice to touch upon it again, just in case people don't listen to the boxing show. Yeah. How are you feeling about the Champions League final this week? Are you feeling confident? Yeah.
Yeah. Supremely confident. Yeah. Supremely confident.
Obviously. What about former Everton manager and absolute don of football himself, Carlo Ancelotti, being the guy that stands in your way?
Not a problem. No problem.
Don Carlo. That's it. You'll get that ball to Benzema, eh?
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. But listen, at the end of the day, I think Fabinho is the big one for Liverpool. We just need to have Fabinho back in that midfield. If you have Fabinho
poor man's Fernandinho.
We don't want to go. Fuck me. Fernandinho wears Fabinho pajamas, you divvy.
Is he?
What we don't want to do is head into another Champions League final, with all due respect, James Milner and Jordan Henderson as our anchors in midfield, because we need to be 100%, man. Thiago Limpa,
all right, Jürgen. All right, Jürgen, calm down, lad.
I've gone all in. I've gone serious now.
Jürgen, lad, there you go.
I've gone business. I've gone proper business now.
Fucking hell. Boxing show, we started with dog nonsense, and now we're talking about football tactics. What's going on here?
But I can't wait for it, mate. Yeah, I cannot wait for it. I'm going to have a party in ours on Saturday. Obviously, we're together on Sunday at the wedding. You better pray that Benzema manages to wriggle his way out of Virgil's pocket to score. Otherwise, you are getting it all day Sunday. 7, 7, 7. I'm just going to put 7 everywhere, all over the church, all over the reception. 7, 7, 7. Do you want 7, 7, 7, 7? Do I have your potty?
Mate, unreal. Judging. Yeah.
Whoa-hoy!
It's going to be a hot topic on today's show, ladies and gentlemen. But the conversation here on the MMA show is a lot easier to have. Do you know why? Mm-hmm. Because they've got unified rules, and they've got a nice little tablet set in stone for you to follow, and therefore you can actually identify as to how a certain person has won a fight and why a decision has been made. Now, my conclusions from watching the main event of the weekend between Holly Holm and Caitlin Vieira are that quite a lot of people, whether they are working in MMA, whether they are fighters in MMA, whether they are in the MMA fan base, could do with going to read the unified rules criteria. Now, that is not me saying that I agree with the results at the weekend, where Caitlin Vieira wins a split decision against Holly Holm. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that a lot of people could go away and actually read the unified rules rather than using silly words like robbery and various things like that on social media, which are quite damaging, if we're really honest. Even the lovely people at ESPN, I saw them put a tweet out saying something like, Holly Holmes outstruck with significant strikes, Caitlin Vieira. Yeah, over 25 minutes, that's not how this game is scored, my friends. It is scored on five-minute rounds on main events, and obviously three five-minute rounds. That's what we're doing. We're scoring individual fights. We're not scoring an overall fight, are we? So come on, let's not add petrol to the fire of people saying that we need to rip up the rule book. We need to rip up this. We need to rip up that. We need open scoring. We need that. Whoa, pump the brakes, man. MMA, it ain't that broke. Of course, we can always get better. Of course, we can get better. Of course, we can have better education. And that's the key thing for me. Better education. More people need to read the unified rules. So therefore, they understand how a fight is scored. Triple Ds. Damage. Criteria number one. That's the first thing that you're looking for, ladies and gentlemen. Damage. Dominance and duration obviously play a part, but they are secondary and tertiary things that you are looking for. So therefore, clinching somebody up against the fence for the best part of 10 minutes of a 25-minute fight, come into these categories here. What happened here? This is what you're looking for. Where's the damage? Now, if there wasn't any damage, fair enough, then we'll go into secondary and third criteria, and we'll have that conversation there. But who did the damage? That is what you are looking for, boys and girls. Now, we'll get to the fight now, shall we? And give you a take on how we believe that this fight's
out. Let's do it round by round, yeah?
Yeah, go on.
Round number one. I think a lot of holding up against the fence. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
I think that was the strongest influence of quite a slow first round, quite a tough round to score. But I think those moments were the defining moments of the opening round. So I don't think any of the judges got it wrong. I think we probably both agree. Holly Holm is one round up after a very close, very uneventful first 5 minutes.
Yes.
Correct?
All three judges believe that Holly Holm takes the first 5 minutes. And if you look at it, when it was at distance on the feet, there's a couple of leg kicks landed by Caitlin Vieira.
Correct.
Damaging shots. And you think to yourself, okay, nice. Yeah. She's taken a little bit of the power bar there. Let's use this as a computer game. She's taken a little bit of the power bar there. But for a good 3.5 minutes, that fight takes place up against the fence where Holly Holm, yes, she has the dominance and duration, but they are secondary things. So keep them to a side for a second. What is she doing in that clinch? That's what you've got to be looking for. Because all this is a position. This is position. This is geography. Forget that. It's like when people are telling you about takedowns. Takedowns win. No, they don't. It's what you do with the takedown that wins you the round. So now we've got Holly Holm dictating the geography of where this fight is taking place. What's she doing in that geography? She is landing those knees on the inside of Caitlin's
thigh.
She's landing those. Now, how damaging are those? There's an accumulation of those. So did they outweigh the action that took place for a minute on the feet at distance? Did that outweigh that? I would slightly favour yes, it slightly does. So therefore, damage you would go towards Holly Holm slightly. And then, of course, you've got dominance and duration. It's all Holly Holm. Okay?
Yeah.
Completely agree. First 5 minutes, Holly Holm, go.
Yeah. Second round, a lot more fight on its feet. A lot of Holly Holm again, holding up against the fence. But regardless, doesn't matter what happens in the first 4 minutes, what happens in the final minute is the most important part. And that's when Holly Holm is very close to being choked the fuck out.
Easy.
And she does incredibly well to survive. But that was a clear 10-9 round in favour of Caitlin Vieira. No ifs, no buts, no maybes. Holly Holm almost got choked the fuck out.
Fight ending scenario. Tick, tick, tick. All three judges agree as well, my friend. Round number three.
Mm-hmm. So round number three, and I think this could be the round
that sways everybody.
Because I think 4 and 5 are quite easy as well. I personally believe that Holly Holm won round number three. Again, a lot of clinch work, a lot of activity there. She's throwing shots up in the guard. When it was at range as well, she was having some success, similar success to Caitlin Vieira. Very close round to score. I went with Holly Holm, a lot more cage control as well. Probably the secondary points because she was as comfortable with the first points. So I went with Holly Holm. But again, similar to round number one, close round, potentially difficult to score. But the secondary points, the duration points especially, probably favours Holly Holm. That's why I went with Holly Holm.
Right. Now then, I
judges
agree.
Judges went the other way. Two of the judges went the other way.
And one went the same way that you've gone. Now, I agree with you. I went, in the moment, I went with Holly Holm, right? However, if we read the unified scoring criteria, you can fully understand why the other judges have gone with Caitlin Vieira. Now, the reason for this is, first criteria, damage. Look for damage. Who is causing the most damage? Caitlin Vieira is landing some big right hands. Big single shots. There's nothing accumulative about it, but there's some big right hands, and she is clipping Holly Holm on a couple of occasions. Kicks are going in there as well. You're right in what you're saying regarding the secondary and tertiary scoring criteria of dominance and duration. It is, again, a very similar play out where Holly's doing her thing, clinching up against the cage. But she is landing consistent little knee digs in there, into the thighs, into the inner legs, and all the, that's still there. That's still racking up. Not as much as those big right hands, but it's still racking up, racking up. But you're right in what you're saying there. When that fight did separate and these two girls are at range, Caitlin Vieira is landing big shots, but so is Holly. Holly is also landing shots in there as well. Now, some of Holly's shots, when you see them, she makes those sounds, doesn't she? Of and not everything lands. Not everything lands. There's bluster. It's like a bluster, isn't it? She throws a lot of this stuff. Some of it does land, and it's not. I'm 100% in agreement with those that believe that Caitlin Vieira land the more single, hard hitting, damaging shots in that round. Holly Holm's shots did have an effect. Now, were there enough of them in that round to outweigh the damage that Caitlin Vieira did? Now, if you believe that that is the case, as I slightly do, and we're not talking margins, man. We're not talking robberies here. No. I believe that it was ever so slight that the accumulation of the shots that Holly put together outweighed the damage of Caitlin Vieira, and therefore then you would go to secondary and tertiary criteria, of which I think quite obviously Holly takes in that round. So therefore, I really slightly gave it to Holly, but I fully can see why a judge has gone really slightly to Caitlin Vieira. Yeah, it's not a robbery at all, mate. And I agree with you. I think the third round is the swinger round.
Yeah, and then obviously fourth round, I think universally all the judges scored it. I scored it in favour of Caitlin Vieira.
Even though in the fourth, there's that significant moment of that sidekick from Holly, which knocks Caitlin Vieira on the floor.
Yeah, so that,
you know.
Yeah, absolutely. But Vieira's landing the better stand up again. Her hands are just that bit sharper.
I agree.
She's snapping Holly's head back. So I've got it level now, going into the fifth. I've got it all square. I'm happy with that. I'm happy with my cards, even though there's been some close rounds in favour of Holly Holm.
Yeah.
And then Holly Holm, for me, has her best round of the fight in the fifth round. She clearly wins the fifth round, in my opinion. She suddenly looks sharp. She's landing those teep kicks to the belly. She lands like three or four of them. Front kicks to the face. She lands like two front kicks to the face. And then she even lands a little bit of a high kick, similar to the one she knocked out Ronda Rousey with. In that round as well. I think that was, for me, the only clear Holly Holm round was round number five. But on my scorecard, I did three rounds to Holly Holm, two rounds to Caitlin Vieira. But as you say, that third round, man, if I'd sat there with someone and they'd argued for Caitlin Vieira, I'd have had no argument back whatsoever.
And that's
the issue comes from heading into the fifth round, you've got John Anik and Felder, I think it was, who were like, this could be all square, this is all square. And DC's reaction, and not to throw DC under the bus, but DC's reaction to them is, what? You think this is level? And they're like, yeah. And he's like, oh, I'm with, because in the corner, the Nova and Yao corner, Didi Pedernales is saying to Caitlin Vieira at the end of the fourth, start of the fifth round, you're throwing this away. You're throwing this fight away. Get out there and do it. And I think he's listened to that and he's thinking, oh, a lot of that cage control. Listen, he's ex-wrestler, man. Of course, he sees that as dominance. And he's like, so you could tell DC had Holly Holm 3-1 up after the first four rounds. But categorically, that did not happen. She definitely didn't win three of those four rounds. But DC clearly had a three up because he's obviously scoring things that he likes to see. You can't score what you like to see. You have to score what the unified rules of the sport defines you to score for. We learned this And yep. that's why we preach this shit, man. We were yep. converted. We were told. Doesn't matter what you like to see. It matters what the fucking rules state and what the criteria is. The yep. criteria is what everybody follows. You need to understand that before you can do this. And that's why we've done that. Obviously, we do a lot of commentating on UFC. And I think DC, man, someone needs to put an arm around them and say, son, doesn't matter what you like. It matters what the criteria is.
Yeah, correct.
It was close. Could have gone either way.
And this is why we make this argument all the time for this to come into boxing. This is why we make this argument all the time because,
yeah,
of course, you saw a commentator at the weekend speaking the way that he's... an ex-fighter speaking the way that he... The
ex-champion, a two-weight champion.
And this is not his fault. This comes down to an education thing. Because I've seen loads of debates off the back of this particular fight and the Eric Anders fight as well, where people are starting to call for open scoring and what have you. I'm against open scoring. And the reason why I'm against open scoring is because I genuinely think that if a fighter is well up on cards, you will see then a change in attitude. You'll see them coast. I like yeah. jeopardy. I like the unknown in a fight. I like people having to guess and therefore yeah. them... to obviously, I get the other argument of saying, oof, well, we actually thought this. Now we've got to change our game plan and therefore that fighter might have to come out a little bit more aggressive rather than be on the back foot. I get all that argument. I kind of think that, especially in MMA, it's okay. Everything's fine. It's down to the education. It's down to understanding what the unified rules state. They are there in black and white for you. How do we score a fight? You're looking for damage. Who's causing the most damage? Or then you go for duration. Then you go for this dominance. Sorry, dominance, then duration. That's what you're looking for with the three Ds. If you stick to that, you can't go far wrong. We've just explained that fight to you. It's not a robbery at all. You have three judges, cage side. They've agreed on 14 of 15 rounds. It's not that mad. It's not that mad of a... Listen, the Eric Anders one, the scorecards are all over the place. I get that. But again, you've got criteria to look at, to work towards and say, right, who caused the damage? And as we've just said, round three is probably the round. You look at round three and you think, can I make an argument that Ketlin Vieira caused the most damage in that round? Yeah, you can. Can I make an argument that Holly Holm caused the most damage in that round? Yeah, just done it for you. That's what I did. So... Mm-hmm. It's not a batshit crazy score to say that Ketlin Vieira won that fight. It was not a robbery, but Holly Holm can most certainly feel a little bit aggrieved by it. If anything, she left the result of that fight in the octagon with all the clinch work and not doing enough work within the clinch. But then you could obviously say, well, when it was actually on the feet and there was distance between the two, Ketlin Vieira was cracking her a bit.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why she was doing it.
Until the fifth round, though. Holly yeah. Holm lit her up on the feet in the fifth round. So why didn't she do that earlier on? Don't get me wrong. I think Ketlin Vieira was really feeling the fight in the fifth round. She looked exhausted. And maybe that was because of all the clinch work from Holly Holm. Maybe that paid dividends later on in the fight. The issue I've got, of course, is the fact that the argument for Team Holly Holm will be... Well, they won't make this argument, but the argument they could make would be... Bellator last week... Logan Storley took down Michael Venom Page and lay on top of him for 25 minutes.
Did the same thing, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
And he got the decision. Okay, it was a split decision, but he got the decision. Logan Storley didn't land any damage. He just took Michael Venom Page down and held him down. Holly Holm has taken Vieira to the cage and pinned it against the cage, driving in the occasional knee, throwing enough dirty boxing to stop them from being broken up. That's what she did. She wasn't trying to knock her out. She wasn't trying to finish her. She was holding her there, and it was a game plan to just do enough not to get separated, just do enough to stall. So if it's working in one main event, albeit a different promotion, why can't it work here? And that's the problem, and that's even with the unified scoring system, which is sensational, and again, we're so envious, we wish we had it in boxing, there's still going to be moments when fights like this are because people still aren't educated enough to know that holding someone down, holding someone against the fence, isn't a fight-ending scenario. You're not advancing, you're not landing damage, no. You're not trying to fight.
You're trying to stop the fight.
Yeah,
you're
trying to stop the fight. So... As much as, and I love Holly Holm. Fucking who doesn't love Holly Holm, man? The preacher's daughter, been there, done it, wore the t-shirt, still kicking ass in her 40s, still a fucking fox in her 40s. Love her to bits, man. But this will be a warning to her that that's not how Holly Holm fights. And that's not how she became world champion. She never did that to Ronda Rousey or Miesha Tate. She let them the fuck up. And okay, you don't have to light everybody up. But trying to stall someone against the fence was just a weird tactic from Holly and Mike Winkle, John, and all those guys. And I'm kind of, as much as I like the girl, as much as I love that camp, I'm kind of glad I came back and bit them on the ass, because that's not what people pay for. That's not what this sport should be about. Manipulating position to just kind of steal rounds, which is what she tried to do.
Yeah.
So I'm glad Caitlin got it, even though, had I been a judge, I'd give it to Holly Holm.
Yeah. That is why the unified rules and scoring criteria came in, to award proactive fighting.
Yeah.
Of which we got in the Michelle Pereira Santiago Ponzinibbio fight.
Sensational fight.
Well, listen, we told you last week that this was the main event for us. This was the fight. Dead excited to see Santiago Ponzinibbio back in there against someone like Michelle Pereira, who, by the way, I came to this conclusion over the weekend watching him. He's one fighter that has, without any shadow of a doubt, benefited from the COVID era. And what I mean by that is, when he used to fight pre-COVID, it was all, I'm showing off to the fans, I'm doing my dancing, I'm doing my bike flips, I'm doing my cartwheels, and I want to hear the wows and the roars and what have you. Then when he goes behind closed doors, he settles down because he's no one to play to. He's just got a fight. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then he settles down, he gets on his game. Yeah, and he does his thing. And look at him now. I think he's on a 5-fight win streak. It includes, obviously, Ponzinibbio at the weekend, Nico Price, Chaos Williams, Fialo, he beat him as well.
Yeah.
Dude's on a nice little streak. He's managed to channel the crazy. There's enough crazy there to keep me entertained. There's enough there. But he's channeled the crazy, and he's now turning into a fucking really exciting monster in this division. Fantastic first round. Fantastic. Yeah. Absolutely outstanding. Really competitive rounds 2 and 3. And I know that we had the cards that were all over them. I scored it 2-1 in favour of Michelle Pereira. I think Ponzi did enough.
Round 1 and 2, do you give him?
Yeah, I think Ponzi did enough to get the third round. I've no problem whatsoever with it. I think one of the judges went 3-0. I've actually no problem with that, because I actually thought 3 was a really competitive round again with the unified scoring. I went 2-1. I can see 2-1 the other way as well, because 2 and 3 were really competitive, but I personally went 2-1 in favour of Michelle Pereira.
Yeah, listen, again, you know, you say it's one is favoured one, the other. I don't know what's happened to Santiago Ponzinibbio, but he just continues to look a little bit gun-shy to me. It wasn't until the third round that he really started to fucking let it go, you know? And don't get me wrong, Michelle Pereira is such a tough opponent because he's so big. Ponzinibbio's a big welterweight. He's a 6-foot welterweight. And yet, Pereira looked fucking like a middleweight. He is absolutely massive. Like, I've got no idea how a guy, he's the same height as me, Pereira, he's 6'2", and he does 170 pounds and looks like that. Like, when you remember the pictures I showed you of when I rode the racehorse, and I had to get down to super middleweight, boxing super middleweight, which is 168 pounds, basically the same thing. I had to get down to 168 pounds to be able to ride this fucking racehorse, and I swear to God, I look like someone off Trainspotting. I look like a baguette. Honestly, there wasn't a fucking ounce of muscle on me. I was like a bean pole. A bean pole. Honestly, it was like, you know when little kids have six packs because they're just little kids, not because there's any muscle there. That was the six pack I had. I wasn't. My shoulders are gone. My biceps are gone. It was fucking weird. I looked like I was ill. I don't understand how Michelle Pereira can make weight. The same weight that I became a smackhead for and look like that, and he's the same height as me. It doesn't work. I don't understand the fucking biology, the physics, whatever it is, whatever science is behind that. I don't understand it. I could show you a picture of me help Michelle Pereira on the scales and me dressed as a jockey, and I swear to God, and with the same height, I swear to God, you'd be like, there's no way in the world those people are the same weight, because he's ripped to bits. He's massive. That's muscle mass as well. I had like something like 7% body fat. It was mad. His body fat must be nil.
Big boned.
Well, obviously, I've got a massive cock. That's what it must be. But it was just incredible. Baffles me how a guy that size makes welterweight. But again, he used the size really well. You're right. I think he's come on so much. All that nervous energy that he's got, he channels it the right way now. I think Ponzinibbio come on strong, don't get me wrong. I think a five-rounder, probably fancy Ponzinibbio. I think the fight was turning late in the second. I think Ponzinibbio has the better the third. If there's a fourth and fifth, I think Paella's gas tank has gone. And I think Ponzinibbio takes over. But it wasn't a five-round fight. It was a three-round fight. Paella's ranked now. Ponzinibbio had a ranking. He's going to take that off him. He'll be ranked this week, top 15. And you're right, man. This version of Miguel Paella is a problem for any fucker out there. He's obviously just got a really small cock.
The other highlight for me was the finish that... Chidi Jukwani.
Chidi Chidi Bang Bang. Chidi Chidi Bang Bang.
We'll do that. We'll put that as the name of the show. What a fantastic little finish that was from him. Coming off the clinch, coming off a little bit of grappling with a dirty elbow right on the temple. First round KO once again. His last one was in 16 seconds. This one, I think, were about 5 seconds remaining of the first round. I'll be honest, when Chidi came into the UFC, he came off the back of the Contender Series, but his run into the Contender Series was through Bellator, and I think he lost his last three at the back end of his Bellator run. So you kind of think to yourself, oh, well, you know what I mean? Maybe this is last chance saloon. He's early 30s, isn't he? What is he, 33 years of age? What's he going to do? His two fights in the UFC have just been, what the fuck?
I know.
He's found some shit from somewhere, man, and he's a problem.
Well, listen, his brother was always a problem as well. His brother started out as a real problem. His brother Anthony, whose career I followed and covered in the UFC a decade ago, he was a real problem, and then he got to a certain age, and obviously, you know, he fell away now. And it was nice to see at the weekend, he obviously works in Chidi's corner. So the family have been there, done it, wore the T-shirt. They know what this game's all about. And sometimes it's about... Listen, it doesn't matter what organisation you fight for in this sport, or how high up you are at in that organisation, you want to be in the UFC. Everybody wants to fight in the UFC. It's the fucking Champions League of mixed martial arts. Doesn't matter what belt you've got with what organisation, I don't care who you are, you want to fight in the UFC at some stage in your career. And maybe Chidi thought it passed them by. Maybe the motivation in Bellator wasn't quite there. And he lost the good guys in Bellator, don't get me wrong, but maybe you're like, you know, when you're not at the big show and it's not working out for you, is the motivation there? You're thinking, well, I'm never going to follow my brother's footsteps now. I fucking can't string two wins together in this organisation. So that's a fantasy. But credit to Chidi for not giving up hope, man. He comes away, goes and fights in Legacy. Yeah, man. So he'd have swallowed his pride. I'll go on Dana White's Contender Series. I don't give a fuck. I know how good I can be. With the right motivation, with the right opportunity, I know I can succeed in that organisation. So he's had to bite the bullet. He's had to take a step down to the regional scene. He's got to win there. Then he's had to eat a bit of humble pie. Yeah, go on, I'll go on the Contender Series with all these 6-0, 10-0 novices. I've been there, done it, got a T-shirt. And yeah, I'll eat humble pie. Goes on there, gets a win, gets into the UFC, and fuck me, he looks like an assassin. He's absolutely massive. And he's a problem because he's suffered the defeats. He's learned from the defeats. He's had the rough end of the jaw. He's fought all over the world. He's got loads of experience. And now he's smoking motherfuckers in the first round like it's nothing. Chidi Chidi Bang Bang is a problem for this middleweight division, I'm telling you. Quality. It's good to see, man.
Chidi Chidi Bang Bang. You love that. You just love saying it, don't you? Yeah, great. Great performance from him. Any other highlights for you at the weekend?
Probably our boy, the little man himself, Screech, getting a knockout in the third round with Chase Super. How can you not love that kid, man? Game as anything. Fucking looks like just a schoolyard nerd. Yeah, not only has he got the jiu-jitsu, but the kid's putting people away now as well. Lovely bit of ground and pound. Nice finish for Chase. Bags himself a 50 grand bonus as well. I think he got the other bonus, didn't he? Him and Chidi got the bonuses, and I think Ponzinibbio got the fight of the night. So, yeah, man. Wicked stuff.
I like the matchmaking because on paper it was two elite grapplers, two elite specialists in that forum. And we get this all the time, don't you? When you get two elite grapplers or you get two elite wrestlers fighting off against each other, they turn it into a bit of a kickboxing match and they try and knock each other out. Okay, mm-hmm. it's novice kickboxing, but it's great to watch, man, because they just wang away. Well done, Che Super. Back in the mix. Still looking fucking 16 years of age, but he's now 22. he's getting a little bit older. Just moving away from the UFC for a split second, because this week there will be announcements that I'm sure British and European fight fans will like from the PFL. I'm not going to tell you too much about it, Nick might, but we're not going to tell you too much about it. That'll be revealed Tuesday of this week, tomorrow. I believe. So mm-hmm. therefore, if you listen to this podcast after Tuesday, you'll already know. The PFL last week had some big news, big news dropping. Alex Rodriguez, the man from the MLB, one of the greatest baseball players of all time, A-Rod, more commonly and affectionately known. He invested in the PFL, which obviously then takes the valuation of the PFL to over $500 million, which is absolutely bonkers. He's joined the board of directors. He's been investing in sports teams and various other bits for some time now. I think he invested in the Timberwolves, but now he's obviously an investor in the PFL. And the aim for that investment from him and various others that got involved last week is to entice the best fighting talent from around the world. Obviously, there's shitloads of fans, mixed martial arts fans, all over the world in loads of different territories. And the PFL are making a serious play. They're making mm-hmm. a serious play Big on time. British and European mixed martial arts. We've already told you about the television deal that they've cut. There's nothing more nothing more frustrating than telling you about a fight that's happening and then not you being able to go and watch it. Now they've cut a deal with a mainstream broadcaster in Channel 4. I think the big important thing for their growth. Now, bear in mind, they've only been going 4 years. Right? The PFL is only a four-year-old company. Obviously, the UFC have done the groundwork for the majority of people. They've created the interest, haven't they, over a 20-odd-year period. But the PFL's only been here 4 years. It's a very different format, the league format, where fighters are getting points to crack up the league and then you get into a playoff situation at the end. But the key thing for their growth in this country is going to be local fighters fighting in local areas on local time zones. That's going to be the key. Who knows? Yeah. Maybe that's the announcement that's coming this week.
Yeah, and it's great for obviously British talents. You know, I was speaking to a few lads at the gym on last week, and they were absolutely buzzing about it. You know, they were just thinking, wow, the more opportunities for us to get on big shows, the better. You know, the more opportunities, especially a tournament format like PFL, because they're not necessarily, you know, cage warriors are always looking for the next Conor McGregor, the next Paddy the Baddy, the next Molly McCann. They're looking for young fighters who are 3-0, 4-0, give them a platform, put some wins together, get them signed by the UFC. Graham Boylan manages them. Rinse and repeat, man. And it works. It's worked for almost 100 fighters have gone from cage warriors to UFC now. That is their business model. And good luck to them. Always get great fights. In fact, Cage Warriors is back this week, Thursday and Friday, I think it is, in Chelmsford. They've got two back-to-back
Colchester.
Cards. Colchester. Back-to-back cards. Mega. Great. The difference with PFL is they are an entity in themselves. They're not looking to necessarily find the next UFC champion and pass them on. They're looking to crown tournament champions themselves, and they actively go out and find fighters to keep within the PFL and make them serious offers to stay in the PFL with great, great financial rewards at the end of it. So their business model is different. So instead of just, you know, I know a lot of fighters that, you know, have had good runs who potentially are hard to get. It's hard when you're a good fighter, but you've got a bit of a mixed record. It's hard to get matched up because you cost money. Your opponent wants money because you're a dangerous motherfucker. And it puts a ceiling because a lot of these kids in Cage Warriors don't want to be fighting guys with 20 fights experience, even though they've won 10 and lost 10, because it's super dangerous for them. But it's those middle-of-the-tier guys and girls that have perhaps had up-and-down records, perhaps they just missed out on getting on tough or whatever it may be, they're the ones who are hard to match. And hopefully PFL is a fantastic place for them to go and have those breakthrough opportunities, those breakthrough moments where they can, you know, ignite their careers under the PFL banner. That's what I love about it. It's catering for a different type of mixed martial artist, somebody else, somewhere else in their career. Mega.
And listen, they've only been going 4 years, so God knows where they're going to be in 4 years from now, because if you look at some of the talent that they've already got their hands on. Clarissa Shields is over there already. Kayla Harrison, big names, obviously, in female mixed martial arts. You've got our boy, Brendan. We always give Brendan a little bit of a shout off. Out, but they've also got plenty of other talent as well, like Lance Palmer. I'm sure you know these types of names from the world of mixed martial arts, and it's only going to get bigger and better. The more opportunities, the more platforms that are provided for fighters to then to be able to decide where they're going to apply their trade, the better. And one of the key things as well from a PFL point of view, and I'm sure this will excite fighters, next season, and this is the thing, it's seasonal. PFL is seasonal, so they have an actual season. If you miss your dates, you miss your fights. That's just the way it is. You get an off-season, you get a in competition season. Next season, they're bringing in a pay-per-view model. And you've got to qualify as a fighter to be on those pay-per-view cards. And if you do so, the revenues generated from those pay-per-view cards will be split 50-50 between, obviously, the PFL and the fighters. That doesn't happen in MMA. That doesn't happen. You get pay-per-view points, and obviously you get paid bonuses on pay-per-view revenues, but a genuine 50-50 split is something that doesn't happen. So that's revolutionary in itself, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of fighters' ears pricking up at the thought of that and maybe looking
especially
at
if you're a name.
PFL.
Especially if you're a name and you know you can drive pay-per-view numbers. That makes fucking a lot of sense. A lot of sense.
Hmm.
Did you see, speaking of new promotions, did you see Habib at Eagle FC last week? His Eagle FC card dropped in Florida, I think it was, in Miami. I don't know what day it was, like Wednesday or Thursday night, but it was a bit of a disaster, wasn't it? I think 4 or 5 fighters missed weight. The co-main event, Hector Lombard versus Thiago Silva, which, you know, is a throwback UFC main event from 7 years ago. That ended because Thiago Silva threw a fucking illegal knee while Hector Lombard was on the floor. So that became a no contest after 2 rounds. And then in the main event, fucking Junior Dos Santos goes and throws his shoulder out, throwing a punch, and had to pull out of the fight with a shoulder injury. So that was rendered a knockout, a TKO defeat for him because he had to retire. So poor old Habib and the boys are finding out that promoting maybe isn't as straightforward as they'd hoped. There was a super lightweight fight on there, though. Habib said he will always champion the super lightweight class, the 165 division, as he's got over in Eagle FC. So, yeah. Crazy, crazy shit.
I wonder why you just stopped. So, yeah.
Stop. Yeah.
So just stop talking. I'm just looking at other stuff that's happening this week because there's no UFC. There's no UFC this week. We've got to wait till June 4th. But as you said, in Colchester, Cage Warriors rocks into town with these double-headers. And they work. These double-headers work so much.
Friday and Saturday. Is it Friday? Oh, Thursday. Thursday and Friday, is it? 137, let's see. Colchester, 137, 138. Friday and Saturday this weekend. If you're in Colchester, going to Charter Hall on Friday or Saturday night, enjoy it. Cage Warriors, man, to where you see the next superstars.
Mm. So if you are going down there, do enjoy the show. Is there anything else that you would like to cover off? It's been a short. This is a short one today. Obviously, with no UFC coming up this weekend, we were ahead of time before everything jets off to Singapore for UFC 275, where we've got the light heavyweight championship of the world on the line on that particular night. Glover Teixeira back in action against Jiří Procházka. That's obviously next week, but I'm done with the MMA today, mate. There's nothing ticking over.
No, I'm just super excited, of course, for London. Cannot wait to take my teeth in on that. A little bit disappointed that the rumours in boxing seem to be that Usyk versus AJ is going to be happening on the same night over in the Middle East on July 23rd. Bit gutted about that, but I'll be totally honest, mate. As much as I love that fight, I would not miss UFC London for fucking Muhammad Ali versus Mike Tyson flashback. Well, actually, I might miss it.
That's
that,
a lie.
You know what I'm trying to say. After UFC London, the way it was in March, fuck me, mate. Usyk AJ 2 is not dragging me away from that UFC London atmosphere at the O2 because it was spectacular. And so far, I think the fights that they've thrown up are all fucking real good fights, man. Real good fights. The main event, there's going to be questions. The co-main event, there's a lot of questions that need answering. I love it, man. It's a great card. And hopefully we see some more British fighters added to that card this week.
I'll tell you what, we've not actually touched upon. I know, because we've probably not done this because we've known about it for a long period of time, but it's only just been confirmed. publicly, UFC Paris. First time that the Octagon is going to... I knew there was something else. I was trying to rack my brains. That's why I went a little bit... not because I'm hungover from my birthday yesterday. My brain was just ticking. There's something else that we need to speak about. UFC Paris, that's big, especially for British fight fans who fancy a little bit of an away day. You don't necessarily go to the American...
Paris again. Here we go.
Or you go to Abu Dhabi for Fight Island. Well, this is an opportunity because for the first time, the UFC is bringing the Octagon to Paris, the Aurora Arena. It's going to be taking place on September the 3rd. Now, the UFC have not confirmed any bouts. However, we're in speaking to people, and people have told us that certain fights have been verbally agreed and maybe contracts have been signed. They've just not been allotted to this particular venue. We're being told that Tai Tuivasa is coming to France, man. That's right. Get your shoeys out. He's going to be taking on Cyril Gane in the heavyweight division. What a main event that would be if that is to be confirmed. Followed, or should I say, that will then follow this amazing co-main event where Bobby Knuckles is coming to France. That's right, Robert Whittaker taking on the Italian stallion himself, Marvin Vittori. Main and co-main would just be, that would be unreal. Unreal to launch the UFC in France.
Yeah, sensational. Two wonderful fights. And what I have got as well, a bit of inside information. Tai Tuivasa was offered London or France. He was offered Aspinall or Cyril Gane. And Tai Tuivasa chose the former interim champion, Cyril Gane.
He's right. Mm. What are you saying, you?
Interesting.
Hang on, right. What you've just said, that Tai Tuivasa doesn't fucking run from anybody. I'm telling you this now, right?
But he fancies that guy rather than our guy.
Former interim champion is what you've just said. Former interim champion. Listen, there's more clout right now with Cyril Gane. He fought Ngannou, man. Come on. I'm not saying that Tai Tuivasa swerved Tom Aspinall. That's bollocks. He didn't do that.
All I will say is, will Cyril Gane take Tai Tuivasa down? No. He'll stand and bang him because that's how Cyril Gane fights. Is Tom Aspinall capable of taking Cyril Gane down? Yes, he is, quite easily. That's all I'm saying. So I'm just putting that out there. Just putting that out there.
Look at you. Eh?
We see you, Ty.
Yeah, I see you. I'm Sam, Ty. I'm Sam. We want you doing there, mate.
Listen, I'm from the neighbourhood too, bro. That's all I'm saying. I know how this shit works.
Listen, we've got two great main events 5 weeks apart from each other.
Yes, and sensational.
One in London, one in Paris, which will be absolutely brilliant. Obviously, the main event between Curtis Blades and Tom Aspinall in London, followed by that heavyweight. I mean, it's basically winners fight each other, don't they? For an eliminator?
Done.
That's done. What happens.
Easy.
The winners of those main events at London and Paris fight each other for an eliminator for the heavyweight championship of the world.
Correct.
Fucking hell. Unbelievable. But Robert Whittaker taking on Marvin Vittori. I kind of like that fight as well, mate, for this particular division. Obviously, we've got Izzy taking on Jared Cannonier. They're doing their thing. Robert's going to want to try and get back in that mix once again. I know that he's had a couple of goes at it, but he's going to want to try and get back in that mix again. I think he might have to take another one off the back of that. But at London, Till's back. So there might be an opportunity for Till there, eh?
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. You know, and listen, it doesn't need a rocket scientist to say that Till needs a win, man. He needs a win, doesn't he? The pressure's on him in the Hermansson fight. And again, we know how Hermansson's going to fight. He ain't going to stand and bang with Dan and Till. He's going to look to take him down. So quite a clear opponent with a clear agenda, similar to Tai Tuivasa and Cyril Gane. You know, they're going to strike it out. I think Hermansson will want to take Till down. Can he stuff the takedown long enough to light him up on the feet? That's what we're going to find out in London, bro. Can't wait.
There you go. Make sure you subscribe to us. We are available on iTunes. Fight Disciples is what you're looking for, and we're across on YouTube too. Fight Disciples is what you're looking for on our YouTube channel. FightDisciples.com is our website, and we're across all social medias too. No UFC this weekend. You've got a weekend off. Bit of Cage Warriors. Have a little bit of a dip into that. But next week, we'll be back to preview UFC 275. Should be an absolute barnstorm. Well, it's not actually next week, is it? It's Volkov.
I should say it's the week after, yeah. Volkov. Next week.
It's because we're doing the BT Sports Show next week. That's why I've got confused. Yeah. There you go. So the week after will be UFC 275. It's Volkov versus Rozenstruik. Volkov back out already. Back out already doing his thing.
Fucking loves it.
There you go. Back out already against Rosenstreich. That'll be next week. That's what we'll get stuck into. More big boys. All right. Enjoy your week. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, subscribe via iTunes.